Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi folks, welcome to another of these political chats that I do with Dan. Today we're going to be talking about what looks like the last days in the Starmer bunker, because it's been a mad couple of days.
I did think when we started this series, the whole premise of doing a series about how it gets worse for Labour was a very finite idea, because sooner or later you're going to have a week where it didn't get worse, but somehow...
Well, on the plus side, sooner or later, there's got to be an end to the Labour government, right?
Well, yes.
And it feels like we're rapidly approaching that point now. Mm. Before we go on, we'll leave the link in the description to this Lads Hour, where Dan designed a game to accurately model what it's actually like being in the government, what it is like being in the Starmer bunker. Mm. And we played this game and came out of it realizing why they make the decisions that they're making. Because the premise is that the decisions are basically split between three different factions. The backbenchers and whether they revolt, the general public and whether they hate you more than anything, and of course the response from the markets. And the point is that you can never really satisfy any of these groups fully, and when you satisfy one, you harm the other two. And it really changed our thinking on the way that government worked, because actually all of a sudden, all of the ideology goes out of the window, all of the high-minded ideals and goodwill goes out of the window, and you are just sat there playing a strategic, tactical game of just which one is the lowest and which one can I actually appease with what has been dumped in my lap.
Because in the first week, and I designed it like this, in the first week you try to come up with base policies,
yeah,
and in the second week the market tanks and you were just all about the markets, and in the last week the Labour backbenchers were about to expel you, so every policy was just about appeasing them.
Yes. And so you can see that suddenly you're not really thinking politically, you're just fighting for survival constantly.
Yes.
And this was unbelievably well timed. We did this on Friday, and over the weekend, I mean, things have gone on. So
you do need a Lotus Eater subscription for this, but they are very cheap. They're only £5 a month, but it is worth it just for this alone.
Totally worth your time. Dan makes amazing games, to be honest. But anyway, right, so let's talk about the Mandelson stuff very quickly. So you'll notice that when they're talking about this, they'll say Peter Mandelson's friendship with the notorious paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Mm. So yeah, don't get me wrong, bad, right? But actually, that's not why Mandelson has gone. The problem with Mandelson is that he was literally funneling state secrets to Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh, it was textbook treason.
Actual treason. I mean, yes. Starmer came out and said this in the Parliament. So them emphasising Epstein being a convicted paedophile, yes, he is, and obviously he's bad, and why would anyone be friends with him? But that isn't a danger to the realm. That's just disgusting.
I mean, if you had to get rid of everybody who was friends with a paedophile, there would be nobody in the halls of government around the world.
Nobody in the BBC?
Yes.
I mean,
the elite circles would just be empty. So, that is not enough. But yeah, what he did was give away market-sensitive information at a time of national crisis.
Yes.
Now, if I had done that while I was working in financial markets, I would expect to go to jail for a minimum of 10 years.
Oh, I mean, there are people in jail for that for like 20, 30 years.
Yes.
Yeah. This is really bad.
Oh, yes. I mean, I can't think of a more serious corruption scandal that I've ever seen, to be honest.
No, it's crazy.
You have to go back to the height of the Cold War and the passing of like naval secrets and stuff like that to exceed this.
Yeah. This is genuinely mad. And just this, he did this multiple times, and somehow he's still walking around free, although the police did raid his Wiltshire mansion the other day.
Well, not only free, but the BBC are still doing puff pieces on him and getting him magazine articles and, yeah.
Yeah, and the Times. And the interesting thing about this is that Andrew did the same. He also shared confidential information with Epstein because, of course, what these guys were benefiting from an international ethnic network, and they were funneling information to it so the network could benefit.
I'm not sure actually what information a royal has these days.
Sure, but the point is, they're both just as guilty. But the thing is, actually, Mandelson and Andrew are kind of sideshows to all of this. They are, I mean, Mandelson is much more relevant than Andrew in all of this, but they love talking about Andrew because he was an ex-royal. And so, anyway.
Well, I'll just quickly say, it is interesting that in the world that we live in, it's safer to go after the royals than it is to go after the ethnic networks exposed in the Epstein files.
That is a very good point, actually. And they're very willing to make a proper sacrifice of him as well. Because, I mean, you know, Charles took action, kicked him out of the palace, stripped him of his titles, and now he's just Andrew, what was it, Goth Coburg Windsor or something.
He's been reduced from 24 servants to a mere 3.
I mean, yeah.
He's practically destitute at this point.
Yeah, and they are very quick to distance themselves. You make your own bed on that one, Andrew. Anyway, so getting back to these issues. Now, I've got a lot of videos, but I'm just going to summarise them just because for the sake of time. This has been a real problem for the New Labour project.
Yes. Because
because Peter Mandelson, for his entire career, has been a core part of the New Labour project and was taken into Starmer's government as the American ambassador, who is, of course, controlling the election, the selection of politicians for the candidates for 2024, being responsible for the cabinet reshuffle, and being intimately connected at the very
top. If you take the holy trinity of Labour, it's Tony Blair, this guy, Alistair Campbell, and Mandelson.
Yes.
It's the three of them.
Yes. And they've been best buddies for decades now. Mm. They were in government together, and they are fundamentally, these are the guys who are responsible for ruining the country. And so Alistair Campbell did this just quick piece to camera on his own, no Rory Stewart here, where he basically tells everyone that he is very proud of New Labour. Very proud of everything New Labour did, which is remarkable. He was disappointed in the scale of the distancing from Peter Mandelson. He thinks that people should be like, "Oh no, don't just throw Mandelson under the bus." And
so he's still being pro Mandelson at this point.
I wouldn't say pro Mandelson, but he thinks that everyone should be cooling down the amount they distance themselves from Mandelson. They shouldn't be throwing him under the bus so much, because of course he's very core to the New Labour project that he's so proud of. But also he concludes that he can't see a way out for Labour, and so he's losing sleep over it. So he thinks this is the end of Blairism. And if this is the primary spin doctor of the New Labour years, if he can't think of a spin to get Labour out of this, they must be pretty screwed.
And remember that the Blair project was bigger than just being in government.
Oh, yeah.
The Blair project was, let's take every function of the state, take it out of Parliament and shove it into quangos that will be permanently run by our people.
Yes.
And that's what somebody, the holy trinity of of Labour, would have understood that mechanism, because it was the core driving thing of everything they did. So if he is worried that this is going to unravel, the entire Blair project could potentially unravel. That is huge for the British constitution.
And you can see why it keeps him up at night.
Yes.
He thinks there's no way out for Labour. I can't sleep. If this all goes down in flames, how does his memory, how does his legacy look? How do any of theirs
look? The entire structure that the Britain works under today is ripe for being unpicked. So, I mean, I don't think that Labour losing an election would cause him to lose sleep, because he's lost elections before. The unravelling of the entire Blair project, that would keep him up, because that's his life work.
Exactly. And that's exactly the point. Anyway, so like Alistair says, he's very proud of New Labour. You have other figures in Labour who have thoughts on this. Here's Maurice Glassman's opinion of Blairism.
It's not fascist. Labour was straight with the working class. We won the war. Ernest Bevin is a hero. So Labour has to... The government and the Labour Party has to repent and reject New Labour as an alien body that took over the party, and this is where it leads. Okay. Perversion and paedophilia.
Lord Glassman, that's...
Tell us how you really feel, Lord Glassman, but is he wrong? That's the point. This is Harriet Harman with the Peter McFarlane Information Exchange. It's Peter Mandelson being best buddies with Epstein and whatnot. Like, he is right, and we've talked about this before, how Tony Blair's managerial, middle-class, rationalist Labour wing took over the Labour Party and steered it in this direction, conquered the country, essentially, and reformatted it in their own image. And Glassman's completely correct.
And that phrasing about Labour rejecting it as some sort of parasite, as sort of vomiting up New Labour, I mean, that would be consistent. Every time that Labour has accidentally had a little bit of democracy...
Yeah.
It has tried to go back to its roots. I mean, that was what Jeremy Corbyn was. That's what Ed Miliband was when he became elected leader. The body of the tendency that coalesces around and in Labour does not want Blairism.
Correct. And Blairism is going to defend itself by throwing up as many smoke screens as it can. I mean, here's a Sky News interview and where they're trying to make this a feminist issue. Now, this is really interesting. One, and Alistair Campbell did exactly this, which is try to hide behind the victims of Epstein as a way of essentially deflecting the issue from themselves.
Specific political issues, but we spoke to Baroness Hazarika a little earlier in the day, who spoke about this actually being about male power and a boys' club that didn't really care about women one way or another. Do you think, or rather, how big a reason do you think that is for the anger, the fury that we're seeing within the Labour Party now?
I think that is considerable, and I think that is also something where Labour Party, you know, has some introspection to conduct. And
So you can see that it's framed along male power. Oh, yeah, this is just what men do, is run Epstein networks, don't you know? Alistair Campbell began his spiel by saying, I'd like to put the victims front and centre, and I've heard this repeated over and over. So hang on a second. One, do you know that the victims want to be front and centre in the Epstein scandal? Mm. Are you sure that they want the kind of level of public attention that actually is drawn to that? But this is a way of you essentially creating a smokescreen, putting someone in the way. Here's some some cannon fodder. It's like, oh no, this is a feminist issue. This is now ideological. No. This is a very concrete issue with the fact that the Labour Party is full of traitors who are literally funneling information to foreign networks.
Yes.
That is a betrayal of the nation. They're trying to throw essentially the women in front of themselves.
Yes.
As a form of protective screen in order to say, no, we have to talk about Epstein's victims. It's like, this isn't really about Epstein and his victims. This is really about you funneling information to a foreign network. The fact that a foreign network happens to be a disgusting paedophile network, as well as this international money power network, is obviously bad and gross. But that's really not the issue, and to try and make that the issue is to distract from the actual damage to the country.
Well, yeah, and you said a moment ago that the chief spin doctor of the Blairite project could not think of a way to spin out of this. This is about as best you can do when it comes to trying to spin out of this stuff.
Yeah,
and it's obviously paper thin.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to actually withstand any of the pressure that's put on it. Jacob Rees-Mogg put up this video saying, like, look, I've actually been in the bunker.
Oh, yes.
As two prime ministers have fallen. He says that essentially the permanent secretaries realize your time is up, and so you won't get anything done while you're trying to hold on to your position. When it becomes apparent that basically everyone else around you, even if you're tight, clique support you in the cabinet, if the rest of the country looks on at you and says, no, I just don't want you here, the permanent secretaries actually take their motivations and sort of incentives from that and say, right, okay, this is very temporary.
Yes.
And in fact, in Mogg's case, he was literally in the cabinet while they were drawing up a policy against what he had done, because he had imposed this policy. He's in the cabinet, but they knew that he's on the timer, so they were just drawing up the policy with him there. So it was just one of those things where it's like, look, the system actually doesn't care who's in charge.
So I don't know if he makes this point, but I mean, the key power that the Prime Minister has is the power of patronage. It's the ability to appoint people and then, you know, enforce his will.
Yes.
I think Starmer's at the point now where nobody wants to work for him.
Well, let's put a pin in that and come back to it, right? Anyway, his former Director of Strategic Communications says he's cooked. He thinks he's absolutely cooked. There's no way out of here. So,
but Morgan McSweeney is saying that.
No. This isn't Morgan McSweeney. I can't remember the name of the chap. Is it
at the bottom there? John Delancey.
A difficult place to work.
That chap.
Oh, okay, that guy.
I can't remember his name. Yeah. But he's the former director of strategic communications. Is it that chap? I think it's that chap. Yeah, is this James Lyons. He thinks he's cooked. And so, yep, probably. One of the problems that Robert Peston points out is that the Labour MPs, and this is, okay, one of the threads I want to take through this episode is that they are completely detached from what the reality of the situation is, actually, right? So let's, in fact, watch Robert Peston explain what the Labour MPs currently think.
Words on who should take responsibility for this. Morgan McSweeney has done that. Is that enough to save Starmer?
Well, I mean, talking to lots of Labour MPs and ministers tonight, the minister's on the payroll, as you would imagine, trying to put a brave face on it, saying things to me like, you know, the country doesn't want a new prime minister. But when you talk to backbench MPs, they are at their wits' end.
So you can see that there's the only lines that they have are delusional ones. the country doesn't want a new prime minister. Oh, no, that's exactly what the country does.
Yes. There is a reason why he is the most unpopular prime minister since records began ever.
Yes.
Well, that is the very definition of people want a new prime minister.
It couldn't be more crystal clear. There's no... In fact, it's so unambiguous.
Yes.
There could not have been a more concrete and definite circumstance in which that would be obvious.
Yes.
The pub, I mean, there was a petition with 3 million signatures they debated in Parliament saying call a general election just a couple of months ago. Like if you to get a petition with 3 million people signing it to call a general election, it shows there is a great well of feeling in the country that people want to get rid of Keir Starmer.
Yes.
But the problem that the Labour Party has, there's no obvious successor to Keir Starmer, actually. Angela Rayner is still embroiled in a tax scandal. And for some reason, HMRC yes. are dragging their heels over that. And Burnham was blocked by Starmer. So the only actual challenger that could have been had, Starmer has kept out of the parliament.
Well, there's David Lammy. I mean, he is the deputy prime minister.
Well, we'll come to all of these in a minute.
Oh, okay.
Because the thing is, it's not really about positioning in the Labour Party. It's really about ambition and ability to sort of build a cohort and a faction within the Labour Party. And David Lammy is very firmly in Keir Starmer's faction because David Lammy is very firmly a Blairite. And so these people are not here to overthrow Keir Starmer. They're, in fact, his principal support.
Mm.
So he is in no danger from any of these people, which is why he blocked Burnham and not them, right? So
yes, fair point.
The rest of politics guys put up another podcast talking about this, and these takes are deranged. And I'm not gonna play you any of it. We're gonna look at their comment section, right? So the reason Starmer came in on a landslide isn't because he's particularly good. It's because we as a nation realised the Tories weren't a viable political party. Keir didn't win a landslide. The Tories, that's really interesting, isn't it? As I said, I'll watch this. They think there's a perpetual, this is another thread that's going to run through this. There's a perpetual feeling in the Labour Party that Morgan McSweeney and Keir Starmer are some sort of killer dream team because they delivered a 418-seat majority. But of course, this ignores the historically contingent fact that is... Actually, it was Nigel Farage that kicked the Tories out from their legs out from underneath them, and that's why they have it.
You can always tell a lot from YouTube comments and the distinction between genuine YouTube media and the non-genuine. Because, I mean, we would have to screw up quite badly for our audience to turn against us in every single comment. It just doesn't happen.
I mean, look at these. It never ceased to amaze me that Alistair Campbell has the audacity to criticise any politicians. It may be that we were going through one of these weird periods in history where the main political parties are in existential peril because they do not represent the people of this country. They represent transnational capital.
Yes.
Their own... comments are just, and these are their fans.
Well, this is the thing, you can always tell when a YouTube channel is astroturfed because their own audience is hostile to them.
Yes. The country is becoming ungovernable, a comment is quite telling. The problem is not the country of its people, it's the standard of our politicians or lack thereof. Again, this is just brutal. Absolutely brutal. So anyway, you can see they are sat on this reservation where they can't bring themselves to admit the failure of the new Labour project, right? That's what this is all about. They all have deranged opinions about McSweeney. We'll come back to this for a minute. McSweeney, the strategic genius.
2019, Labour's worst election defeat in terms of MPs. 2024, huge majority. People say Morgan McSweeney was the man who transformed Labour's prospects from disaster to victory. Do you give him some credit for that?
Look at Amber's smug face. Look how smug she is because she's part of the Corbynites, right? So she's not a new Labour girl.
I'm pretty certain that Diane Abbott is loving this. She has been chewed out by McSweeney more than once.
Well, let's watch.
This idea that McSweeney was an election genius actually ignores the figures. The truth is that in 2024, the Labour vote was more or less the same as it was in 2019. What actually happened was a Tory vote split and half their vote went to reform. So, and when people...
Completely correct.
Nails it. Nails
completely
it.
Correct. And yet the rest is politics. And yet all of the other, you know, all of the top brass, Robert Peston, you know, all of these top brass, I mean, Rees-Mogg probably is aware of this, but all of the rest of them are just completely...
Well, I mean, Rory Stewart, I mean, he's a Blairite too, because the Cameron government was a Blairite government.
Exactly.
And this is basically the first person you've shown who is not within the Blairite framework, whether it be blue Labour or red Tories,
And Diane Abbott is the only one who's telling them the truth on this, which we've seen and we've spoken about time and time again, right? So you can see, again, these people are living in a delusional fantasy land. So my comparison to Hitler moving around the Phantom Divisions in the bunker, I think really holds up here. Anyway, so Morgan McSweeney resigned. And everyone, I mean, for a period of about, I don't know, 12 hours or so overnight, it was really difficult to know what was going to happen. Was Keir Starmer going to go? Because Keir Starmer was going to come out and give a speech. No, he wasn't going to give a speech. And everyone was...
That was the weird thing on Sunday night, wasn't it? A press release went out saying, get ready for the lectern coming out tomorrow. Then half an hour later, it got, oh, no, he's changed his mind again. He's going to try and fight it.
Yeah. Keir Starmer's full of U-turns. So
he even U-turned his own resignation.
He actually did, yeah. But eventually, Morgan McSweeney resigns. And, of course, he puts out a statement saying, Mandelson, disgusting. Oh, can't believe I have anything to do with him. And it's like, but you were his protege.
Yeah.
You lobbied for him to be brought into the Labour government and given such access.
There was also a line in there, if you read his resignation, and the line was something like, I apologise for the advice that I provided when I was asked for my advice. So actually, he's subtly turning it back around and saying, yeah, but I didn't actually decide this, he did.
Yeah.
I just gave my opinion.
And who knows what happens, because I mean, like, Morgan McSweeney is like the Dominic Cummings of Labour, and Dominic Cummings went pretty damn hard against Boris Johnson. In the months after
his resignation. That's true.
So who knows?
And actually, you want to remember which way round this relationship went. Yeah. Morgan McSweeney was a bigwig in Labour before Keir Starmer.
Long before. He spent his entire career
in
the Labour machinery.
Yes.
Behind the scenes.
And when the question of we need a new leader came up, Morgan McSweeney was making the case for Starmer,
correct,
not the other way round. He is the senior partner in this.
And you'll notice that, remember when this was brought up in Parliament, when this was first going on during the PMQs, and he stood up and said, Morgan McSweeney is an essential part of this government. Well, okay, but that's weird that you were that quick to defend it. It kind of implies you're dependent on him,
yes,
and not the other way around. But also, okay, now you've lost an essential part of your government. What's your decision-making capacity, Keir Starmer? Because you are, A, not a politician, you're a lawyer, and B, you're a terrible politician, and C, Morgan McSweeney was clearly doing everything that you did. He was obviously explaining these things to you.
I mean, the chief of staff attends cabinet. I mean, he has basically access to everything. He's got basically the highest security clearance you can have without actually being the prime minister.
Yes.
I think, and I've gone back to this a number of times, I think we are past the stage where politicians actually decide anything. I think they're frontmen, they're narrative shapers, they're the people who take the blame, the buffer. If I had to point to anyone who is actually running the government, I'd actually say it was McSweeney, and that's why it was unimaginable to be able to sack him.
And that's why he had so much pressure on him, because, I mean, leading up to this, the entire, like, year and a half that Labour have been in government, or how long has it been, what, 18 months, something like that? I think it's about that. Everyone,
feels longer than it's been.
But McSweeney has been the guy who's constantly been dumped on by Labour, by the backbenchers, by the Corbynites, by, you know, the trade unions, by whoever.
Yeah, because he's the one who tells them no.
Exactly. He's the one who's actually making decisions. Anyway, Starmer has decided to replace him with two part-time girl bosses, which is just incredible judgment. I'm sure they'll do brilliant.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, I mean, if you were a competent person, why would you want to come into Starmer's government now?
Like, oh, yeah.
There's a reason why Mogg didn't get involved after the Conservative government started collapsing. You notice he stepped back because he knew that someone was going to be left holding the bag here and he didn't want to be in, which is very smart, frankly. And so these two ladies have decided to... I mean, there's a really weird optics on this as well. It's genuinely a kind of Islamic perspective. We can have that one man or two women. It's just really bad optics. Is this feminism? Anyway.
Are they actually part-time and sharing the role?
I believe so, yeah. Both part-time.
Can you not find somebody who's willing to be chief of staff and effectively run the UK government? I mean, is it that difficult to recruit to that you need to do a job-sharing arrangement?
I mean, I can't imagine it's easy for Starmer to find people to help him. Now, these two, again, they're fairly long-running Labour Party operatives and obviously a part of the new new Labour system. But the Starmer only has people in the background to draw upon now. So he's only got the sort of the people who have been running the Labour Party to bring in. He can't bring in anyone with any significant public presence because they're like, no, God, why would I want that? You know, these are people who don't.
Oh, you're not getting Alistair Campbell back at this point.
No, exactly. You don't.
You have to do is go and find the girls that were making the tea when Blair was in power.
Yes.
Who are somehow still working.
Who've just worked their way slowly up the hierarchy.
Who somehow survived the Corbyn era. And it's like, okay, well, you're the only available Blairites who are still here.
Yes.
Congratulations, you're now, chief of staff. Oh, I can't because I look after the kids on Thursdays. You are now chief of staff.
What was the name of the admiral who took over after Hitler killed himself? Dotnes or something, right? Just like the German admiral, the Nazi admiral who actually surrendered to the Allies.
I don't know.
I can't remember the guy's name now, but it's like he just kind of inherits this unbelievable. Like these ladies are in the same sort of position. But anyway, the point being, everyone knows his position is, I mean, as the BBC say, dire, right? Mm. This is immense peril. This is a position that, honestly, I mean, Keir Starmer, remember when he came in? He was saying, yeah, we're going to bring respectability back to politics. We're not going to have any scandals. And it's been non-stop scandal day after day after day until the Epstein files drop. And it's like, right, your government is basically controlled by Epstein. It's like, what? Like, non-stop scandal? Like,
if it actually had been what he envisaged it to be, the Epstein stuff could have come along. You could have gone hard on Mandelson.
Yep.
You could have made the issue about him. But this has arrived at failure after failure after failure. So, and it just plays to the issue is that your judgment and your whole political worldview is broken.
And your instincts as a politician are bad.
Really? Oh, he's not a good politician at all.
No, and everyone can see it. And the fact that he's been so exposed for being so dependent on the gross Blairite network. In fact, the way that the Telegraph put it is the sordid regime of Keir Starmer. And it's like, well, that's true, to be honest. Like, it is sordid to have Peter Mandelson around you, and it always has been, and everyone's always known it. And the fact that Labour have been so dependent on Mandelson just to get anywhere is like, okay, that's gross. What is wrong with you? Anyway, so there are lots of takes like this, which is, this is a really, really good writer from Alex Wickham. I can't remember where he's from offhand. Bloomberg, right? UK political editor for Bloomberg. There's a really good write-up pointing out that this is basically the end of Blairism, right? It's the kind of debauched, depraved end of Blairism. It's all coming down and everyone can see that that's happening. And as you said, Starmer, he's going to address the nation. I mean, this is his government in crisis. The very core pillars of Starmer's government are falling away. Mm. I mean, no one knows who's really in charge of the Labour Party now, when the Labour government, now McSweeney has popped out.
Well, Starmer doesn't have the political talent for it to be him.
Exactly.
So I guess we're just going to get whatever the best two part-time women can do.
And maybe they'll be brilliant. Who knows?
Maybe.
But Sky weren't persuaded. They set up this. Just a live Downing Street camera.
Oh, they just filmed the door waiting for him to come out.
Yeah, yeah. And this went on for hours as well. This is only like a minute of it. But I was watching this all afternoon because I was expecting Keir Starmer to come out with the lectern and explain what his position was.
And you understand what the news firms have to do this because they want their people there if he walks out and resigns. So they have to leave a guy standing there all day.
Exactly. So revealed preference.
But they don't do that every day. They only do it when they sense the moment is near.
And so you can tell that in the Westminster media sphere, they're all like, okay, yeah, no. In normal circumstances, if this was a Conservative Prime Minister, they'd be Liz Trussing themselves or Boris Johnsoning themselves any minute now.
Right. Yep.
They just come out, or Theresa May, like, come out, have a bit of a wobble in her voice, you know, serving the country I love, and then, stomp it, because the Conservatives are playing politics as it is supposed to be played in this country. If you have actually lost the confidence of your own party and the country by extension, then you do the right thing for the party itself, and you resign. Mm. You have failed. And that is the important part about Keir Starmer. He is, as far as I can tell, a madman
Yep.
Because he is refusing to do this.
Well, he actually believes that he's an entirely virtuous character.
I think so. And also, I think that he has more of a commitment to power than even the Conservatives. And even and people think cynically that the Conservatives are all about power. It's like, no, there is something more to the Conservatives. It's all about preserving the Conservative Party. But Keir Starmer doesn't seem to care about the party at all. He seems to care about the Blairism.
There was an interesting comment that he made to his own backbenchers at a meeting. I think the difference with the Tories is if they leave office, they expect to come back again. The comment that Starmer made at a meeting with the backbenchers, he said, look, I am only the fourth Labour Prime Minister to ever get elected.
Yep.
He understands how rare it is for the Fabians to get hold of the keys of power. And he's like, we're not giving this up easily.
We'll come back to that.
Okay.
Because you're exactly right on that. So anyway, Tim Allen, the Director of Communications, also resigned. He was, again, apparently very close to Mandelson. So it's like, right, okay. Interesting how this is, the pressure is on. Morgan McSweeney's gone. Now his Director of Communications is gone. I mean, this is the Alistair Campbell position, the spin doctor.
Yep.
Can't spin it, right? The Director of Comms has come out and I'm like,
I've got nothing.
Yeah, I've got nothing. I'm going to have to resign, I'm afraid. So again, Keir Starmer, the core pillars of support for his government are falling away.
Yep.
And so, okay, this is not good. We're expecting to see Chris Wormald resigning, which is the cabinet secretary,
yep.
Again, to be replaced by a girl boss. It hasn't actually happened yet, but all of the rumours are that he's going to.
Let's go full girl boss.
Why not?
Why not, yeah.
Why not? How much worse could it get? But the point being, that's the leader of the civil service, and that this is, again, the core infrastructure of the government. You know, the cabinet and the MP set up, but these are the people who hold them all up. And this is all just falling away. And it's wild. As you said, there was a U-turn on his own resignation, decided that he wasn't going to do that. And if you thought this was as bad as it could get, then the leader of the Scottish Labour Party came out and gave a press conference in which he just said, you need to resign. You need to just quit. I won't play it because... But this is Anas Sawa, for anyone who doesn't know, leader of the Scottish Labour, who just came out and said... I'm good buddies with Keir, but too many mistakes have been made. The good things that Labour have done are being drowned out by Starmer's mistakes. It's time for a change in leadership. I'm not backing other candidates. He just has to go. And when asked by the press corps, he says, yes, I did speak to Starmer about this, and I told him that I was going to do this. So Starmer is getting these... you've got to resign. I can't. I'm not going to resign. You've got to. I'm going to go and do a conference calling publicly for your resignation as the leader of Scotland's Labour Party. And Keir's just like, I'll take it on the chin.
And one of the questions that followed this was asking about his motives of doing it. And he said, look, if we don't get rid of him, we're going to have SNP in Scotland.
Yes. And that is a great point. I mean, the irony of this is, of course, he's great buddies with Peter Mandelson. Like, literally, great to catch up with my old friend in the UK's relatively new ambassador to the US. Like, they all love Peter Mandelson. He's a new Labourite too, right?
Well, he was the most senior surviving figure because Alistair Campbell had gone off to do his podcast and write his books and do whatever he does. Blair is...
Lord in Gaza.
Yeah, God knows what he's up to. I mean, he's just pulling the strings all over the world. I mean, he no longer operates at the national level. He's on, you know, galactic terms at the moment. So Mandelson was the most senior Blairite that was still extant.
Correct. And they all loved him. They all knew him. Anyway, Welsh Labour were supposed to do the same thing as well. Welsh Labour First Minister was set to follow Anas Sawa and calling for Keir Starmer to resign. But they decided what they were going to do is see how it went, right? And it didn't actually go brilliantly, so they decided not to do it. They decided, you know what, I'm just going to support the Prime Minister. Full confidence in the Prime Minister.
Yeah, bollocks. Somebody got on the phone and was absolutely bellowing and threatening down the line.
Exactly.
And this Ewan Morgan chap broke.
But why is Scotland in Wales, Labour in Wales and Scotland doing this? Because they're getting destroyed. Right? Absolutely destroyed.
Oh, yeah. They're going extinct.
Absolutely. Like, as we've covered in previous episodes of this, Labour used to be neck and neck with the SNP in Scotland. Now they're not. Now it's Reform and the SNP neck and neck. And in Wales, Labour are on 10% when they used to be on like 50%. Like, Labour have died in Wales. They are over. It's Plaid Cymru and Reform.
I seem to remember on most of the polls that we looked at, Zero seats in Wales.
Literally zero seats in Wales. And yeah. it, like one or two in Scotland, where there are like 50 seats for grabs. Like it is over for the Labour Party in these areas. And this is why these guys have come out and gone, look, no, Keir Starmer has to go because he's ruining us. Mm. He is ruining Labour in Wales and Scotland. Labour in Scotland, Wales, we're gone. Mm. We're gone if you carry on. And Keir Starmer has just told them to essentially suck it. But we'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, so the question is what's going on? Well, Wes Streeting, again, another very Mandelson acolyte, and the person most likely everyone thinks to be chosen as the successor to Starmer, if there is needs to come one, decided what he was going to do is leak his WhatsApp messages with him and Mandelson. And everyone was like, why have you done that? And he's like, well, I think this is going to underscore how I'm no longer close to Peter Mandelson. But actually, in fact, we'll come to exactly what he said. What it did is the complete opposite.
I've got these messages here. And I've only just, to be honest, Wes, I'm literally just reading them shortly before you came in. But there is a lot of genuine intimacy here and friendship. You know, Wes to you to Peter, great pitch, lovely photos in the time. Peter sends you a kiss. There's well done on the BBC. This is Peter Mandelson to you in June 25. I'm literally reading them as I go along. Well done on the BBC, very good kiss. Are you planning to visit the US this year? You hope so, exclamation mark, kiss. Are you embarrassed by that? I mean, that's quite an intimate friendship, isn't it?
No, look, an intimate friendship with Peter Mandelson.
So let's reverse engineer what's going on here. He had a discussion with his close guys and he said, look, I want to be Labour leader.
Yep.
And they said, yeah, but anyone who's running for Labour leader at this point is going to get the Mandelson question.
Yep.
And he thought to himself, compared to everybody else, I barely knew the guy. And what I'll do is I'll publish everything with him so that they can see that my interaction was minimal. But what he forgot was that minimal for a Labour figure still looks like extreme connection to the rest of us.
Yes.
He just thinks that he comes better off compared to everybody else.
Yes.
Not that he wasn't really close to Mandelson, which he clearly was. This is another way of saying that Mandelson infected all of them.
Correct. He was just like Mandelson's WhatsApps must have been like Epstein's emails.
Yes.
Where it's just like this non-stop, you know, string of him replying stuff all day.
But he doesn't have kids, so he's got plenty of time to be WhatsApping everybody.
Exactly, right? And so there is a selection of them. And this is just the most fascinating one, right? This first one. Because obviously he goes on, he criticizes Israel, he criticizes Starmer, right? But it's not that that's actually the most interesting, but it's this, because it tells us about the mindset of these people. So these are private messages between the people at the very top of the Labour Party and what they think about the world. There's no reason to think they aren't, just like with the Epstein files, there's no reason to think these aren't completely candid and completely honest and straight up with one another, right? So Wes Streeting says, I fear we're in big trouble here, and I am toast at the next election. What have we been saying? What have we been saying?
What, that?
The entire front bench of Labour is gone.
Yes.
Right? Every single constituency they're in, right? He says, we just lost our safest ward in Redbridge, 51% Muslim, is Ilford South, to a Gaza independent. At this rate, I don't think we'll hold either of the two Ilford seats. As in, we literally said, Wes, you're getting great replaced. What are you going to do about it? And he's just like, shit, I'm getting great replaced. What am I going
to
do about it?
I'm starting to think we should invite him on this show because his analysis is exactly the same as ours.
Oh, no, it's way worse.
Oh, is it?
Right? No. Their diagnosis of the problem is way worse than ours, right?
Okay.
So Wes then says, there isn't a clear answer to the question, why Labour? Again, we've raised that exactly, right?
Yeah.
Lord Mandelson, the government doesn't have an economic philosophy which is then followed through with a programme of policies. Wes Streeting, no growth strategy at all. You think the reason the Muslims have decided to vote for a Gaza independent is economic?
Yeah.
You morons don't seem to understand why these people are turning on you. I mean, you literally then go on to Israel is committing war crimes. And don't connect these two things together, right? Like,
the people who are voting green do connect them together.
Exactly. And also, Wes, you just don't represent them, right? In the same way you don't represent the rest of the country, they are Muslim and you are an Englishman. You are a secular internationalist. Why would they need you if they could...
I haven't read through all of them. Does he get the ethnic point at all?
No, never comes up. right? And or at least not in the ones I've seen anyway. Maybe there was somewhere else. But the point is, he can see that, oh, well, 51% Muslim, that's an implication. Oh, I know that there is something about that constituency that doesn't want to vote for the Labour Party anymore.
Yes.
But what can I do? I think
he's
toast.
Starting to grasp bits of it, but yeah.
I've actually great replaced myself, which is really stupid. But the point is, Mandelson's reply is just, oh, you need an economic policy. Good point. No growth strategy at all. It's not about growth. What it's about is genuine sentiment and representation. Why would these people want to vote for you when they have sufficient demographic strength to vote for their own? Mm. And the second, right, that's it. And of course, Streeting is currently in third position in Ilford North as well, behind Reform and the Greens. So, you know,
I mean,
this is yourself, buddy.
This is the left-wing policy in every Western government. It's let's great replace our voters because the voters are difficult.
Yeah.
But once you great replace the voters will then replace you.
Yes. Because they still have the power of selection.
I mean, it's such an obvious point that, I mean, we stopped making a point that obvious years ago because it's so obvious. And it looks like Labour are just starting to realise it.
Have we destroyed ourselves? Maybe you did, boys. Maybe you did.
I mean, all they needed was a Lotus Eater subscription 5 years ago, and they wouldn't have got into this mistake.
Too late for them now. Anyway, so Streeting then had to. He was accused of putting Anas Sawar up to the coup against Keir Starmer because, of course, they're all in the same position, right? Mm. Scotland Labour, Scotland Wales, the front bench. Yep. They're all like, right, okay, Starmer's destroying us. We're all going to lose our seats. This is over, right? This is, we are just literally on borrowed time, waiting for the actual connection to be made in the form of an election. The second I have to go to the polls, that's it for my entire political career.
To be fair, and I don't know if you got the Liz Truss tweet coming up, have you?
I haven't, no.
Okay. Liz Truss tweet was something along the lines of, we don't need to just change leaders or even governments, we need to change the system.
Of course, but the point being, it's still about the election to choose who is subject to the system.
Yes, but what I'm saying is that people like Wes Sweeting probably thinks they've got a chance if they replace Keir Starmer. Yes. They haven't got a chance if they replace Keir Starmer, and probably Reform doesn't have a chance because this whole system is broken and nobody is yet thinking at the depth
of course
necessary to change it, I think.
But on the day-to-day level of politics that Sweeting is living in, he's realising, I just don't have a seat anymore. So I'm occupying the seat illegitimately for some Gaza independent candidate from Ilford North.
Yeah.
And therefore people are like, oh, right, so you put an ass up to this to put on all the pressure. Because at the moment, I mean, look how much pressure is on Keir Starmer from the people closest to him. Mm. Look, we're resigning from the cabinet. We've got rid of the person who controls the Labour policy because he was controlled by some international nonce buddy. And the regional Labour parties are coming out, and this is all getting leaked, so no one's got any confidence in you within your own cabinet. Like, oh, you don't have a growth plan, you're screwed, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing in Israel or Gaza, you don't know what you're doing in any of these things. And yet somehow Keir Starmer is not even immune, but just blockheadedly, I'm just going to ignore it. I'm just going to ignore it. But of course, he said, no, I didn't put an ass up to this. And who knows, I imagine that there's a group chat with basically all of them except Keir Starmer and Morgan McSweeney, right?
Yes.
Where they're all like, guys, what are we doing? What are we going to do? Because he is going to destroy all of our political careers. And the only way that we can think of saving them, which is no guarantee, by the way, is by getting rid of him.
Mind you, they can destroy him. He can destroy them as well.
Exactly.
Because all he has to do is say, look, oh, okay.
We'll come to it. Because this, you're exactly right. They are in a kind of prisoner's dilemma here.
Yep.
Right. Notice what's happening is this is essentially a coup from within the Blairites against Starmer. Right? Mm. Not only have we had the outer, like the left or the soft left.
Oh, it's a given they want to destroy him.
Of course. But now it's his own people who are like, guys, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? But when they come publicly, they're too scared to actually mount the challenge. Right. Mm. So anyway, it was apparently debated whether Streeting gets the kick or not, but he didn't. And this isn't...
The problem is, if you get fired by Starmer at this point, it doesn't particularly hurt you.
No. It just hurts Starmer, because again, look at you. Starmer loses, what, 4 people in one day?
Yep.
That's crazy. But he didn't go in the end, or he hasn't gone yet, at time of recording. And as we speak, the redactions of the Mandelson files are currently underway. So they're redacting names and sensitive information. But I imagine that this is not going to go well for Starmer either. So, you've just lost a lot of people. Your own parties are coming out against you. Even the closest guys have leaked their messages saying he's terrible. Yep. What are we doing? He's going to ruin us all. And tomorrow, or the day after, we're going to get the depth of the involvement of Mandelson in Starmer's government. Like the Epstein files, we're going to be able to look through it. And it's
And bear in mind that with Wes Streeting, he released those thinking that he got a clean bill of health.
Yeah.
So what's going to be in these files when they come out? I mean, none of it's going to be good. And the other really worrying thing is that step back and think that, you know, Mandelson as a ambassador to the US, that's a crazy high security level. You get briefed on stuff that even cabinet ministers don't get briefed on, loads of military stuff. So the exposure is enormous for this government.
Yeah. And the fact that Mandelson was caught funneling information to Epstein, it couldn't
and
be worse.
You can't believe that he just did it back then.
It just couldn't
be
worse.
Who is his funder now?
Who knows? And how has he not been arrested? It's like, this is just wild that he's not been arrested.
It is literally treason.
Yeah, I just don't understand what the rationale for not arresting Mandelson is. Charge him with this. I mean, what's the argument? And the argument is going to be, well, he's so core to Starmer's New Labour government that we daren't. Like, if there's anyone who knows where the bodies are buried,
yes,
it's Peter Mandelson.
Well, yes. Your point earlier about Morgan McSweeney, what if he turns on
Starmer?
But yeah, the amount of stuff that Mandelson must know, he could bring down every Labour figure from the last 30 years, I bet, if he wanted to.
I bet he could. I bet he's got files on everyone. And so it's just one of those things where it's like, I think that might be the reason he hasn't been arrested, guys.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
Are you saying that in a year's time we're going to be talking about Peter Mandelson didn't kill himself?
I suspect that Peter Mandelson is the person who would be responsible for that kind of thing, not the recipient of it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Right. I honestly, we're in a position now where I dread to make predictions.
It's fragile as hell.
Exactly. Yeah. Febrile is the watchword, isn't it? Anyway, so... Labour out was trending, and this was trending all the time. So obviously, everyone hates him because remember, Keir Starmer's personal rating is at an all-time low. Obviously, people hate Keir Starmer. They've hated him for months. They've hated him ever since the bloody Southport riots, and it's just got worse. And obviously, you know, 2/3 of the country get out, and he hasn't even got a fifth of the country who think he's doing a good job. 17%. Yeah. What are you doing? Get out. And this is just Keir Starmer's personal rating. Obviously, when you look at the overall approval of the Labour government, I mean, everyone involved is as complicit because they're all terrible. So even if they did get rid of Keir Starmer...
They'll get maybe a few days of respite, and then the underlying systematic problems will re-manifest and it'll be the next guy.
Yeah, the approval, they might get the bump, but it'll just tank straight.
The Tories tried this. They got rid of Cameron and then got rid of May. And then,
never worked.
I mean, they just kept chopping them, and eventually they realised, it doesn't make any bloody difference.
Anyway, the polling averages are, of course, brutal. Labour have been fairly consistent on 19%, but this is before all of this kicks in. So basically, next week, we'll find out what this has.
Oh, the Conservatives could get back to second place.
Maybe. I mean, the Conservatives' average of polls at 16 is atrocious. And then when you translate that into the predicted seats, I mean, even if it's just the average, like, Labour are losing 330-odd seats out of this. So, greatest wipeout ever, right? So, you can see why they're all, like, you know... They're clenching. Like, Keir, what are we doing, Keir? What are we doing? We're on hiding to destruction here, Keir. What are we doing? So, meanwhile, what's the response from within the Starmer bunker?
All right.
What are the cabinet actually saying? What are they publicly projecting? Well, Rachel Reeves, and this went around. There must have been a WhatsApp group or a missive that went around the cabinet where it's like, listen, guys, Keir Starmer is really in trouble here. you're all just going to have to go out and tweet that you support him fully, and he has your complete and full
confidence. Oh, it's so obvious when they do this, though. They do this every time there's a big issue they want to talk about. They all tweet the same damn thing.
Exactly. And it's really transparent. But you know, Rachel Reeves, rebuilding Britain takes time, but thanks to the decisions we've made, NHS waiting lists have fallen, blah, blah, blah. With Keir as our Prime Minister, we are turning the country around. Saying,
the moment there's a new leader, she's gone. So,
of course.
Yeah.
They're all gone.
Yes.
Lammy, fully in the Starmer bunker. Keir won a massive mandate 18 months ago for 5 years to deliver on Labour's manifesto that we all stood on. We should let nothing distract us from our mission to change Britain, and we support the Prime Minister in doing that.
I mean, he's another one. He'll never have a job in politics again after this.
Yeah. I mean, why would you want David Lammy around you in times like this? I mean,
if Labour survives at all, they're going to reinstantiate the old left, but it's probably too late for that because that's already moved to the Greens.
Yeah.
But Blairite, yeah, that's not coming back.
No, it's all done now. Mm. And so these people look like zombies. Like, no one wants the change that you were promising. You shouldn't be in government at all. It's only because of a historical contingency that Nigel Farage, the Conservatives basically should have put Nigel Farage in charge, right? That's what should have happened. And if the Conservatives actually had wanted to survive, they would have done that. But now they're at 16%, yep. Labour's at 19%, and Farage is at like 28%.
I mean, to be fair, the Tories are probably the last visage of Blairism at this point.
They probably will be. I think the Labour Party will implode. And then you've got Darren Jones, who's the Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister. No, we're all standing behind get behind the Prime Minister, Labour. Well,
he's pushing the modern and diverse. I mean, good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a modern, diverse Britain led by Labour, a dark, divisive Britain under reform. Woo, dark, divisive Britain. If only Nigel Farage was the man. Ed Miliband, of course, you know, well, we've got to focus on the country and not Keir Starmer, because, of course, this is really inconvenient for Keir Starmer. And so and they all posted, like, there's something like 35 posts like this.
The problem is, these just get discounted to zero anyway, because, yes. I mean, how many times have we seen politicians do this and then the next day backstab them anyway? I mean,
of course.
It's kind of pointless for them to even attempt this. So
sure, but what it shows us is that Keir Starmer and his cabinet are literally all sat around in the bunker like Hitler in Downfall.
Yeah. What can we do?
What can we do?
And the answer is this.
You have to go out and show the rest of the country and show the party, show all of the subsidiary parties that the Parliamentary Labour Party stands, or at least the cabinet itself, stands united with the Prime Minister. We fall and die together. Or, you know, or not at all. And so we think we can ride this out if we just grit our teeth. Yeah,
but that will be within the core Starmer bunker.
Yes.
The civil servants, they'll be all off writing up their reform papers.
Yeah.
You know, they'll be preparing for reform coming.
Yep.
Everybody outside the direct Starmer bunker will be planning, can I take over from Keir? Who's going to take over from Keir? How can I get in good with the person who's ultimately going to win? I mean, we're purely in a nucleus of a few people at this point. And and apart from Starmer, I'm struggling to think who else is in there with him.
Well, exactly. It's literally just his cabinet, right? It's literally just...
Half of them will be plotting against him and just putting out something like this to save face.
Quite possibly, but the thing is, they all know that the next election, they're all gone anyway. They're no longer MPs. So they are literally like, we are not going to be here ever again.
Mm.
This is the one shot. And this is basically what David Lammy said. I've waited 14 years to get here. Is it time for Keir Starmer to go? No.
David Lammy, is it time for the PM to go?
We've waited 14 years to get here. No.
That was not the right thing to say, David.
No, but what a brilliant mask-off moment. This is just about power.
Yes.
We've been waiting forever. We so rarely win elections because everyone hates us. Now we're here. We are clinging on with all of our might. We don't care. We just want the power. And that's basically what Shemana Mahmood's statement was as well. Right? Labour governments don't come along often. And they think that the mandate is, we want the mandate so we've got 5 years guaranteed. It's like, no, that's not how that works, actually.
No, it's a quirk of fate that you got in, and you're going to ram through every spiteful socialist lefty policy that you can think of why until you inevitably get turfed out and never to be seen from again.
Exactly. And Nigel Farage should be literally every single day coming out with a whiteboard with a list of things I'm going to repeal on day one. And whatever Keir Starmer announces that day, you write it down on the whiteboard and say, right, that's it, Keir. That one's undone on day one, too. See you at the next election.
And the reason he'd do that is because it will make it so hard for Keir Starmer to do everything, do anything.
Exactly. It signals to all of the all of the infrastructure in the government.
Cooperation belts away.
Exactly. Just like Mog was saying, it's like, well, they were drawing up the counter policy to the policy I was proposing because they knew I was going in 2 years or a year or whatever it was, right? Or 2 months, I think it was. So what Farage would be signaling is to all the civil servants, to all the permanent sector, don't do anything. Don't do anything. Don't waste your time because on day one,
Slow roll everything.
And what will that do? Psychological warfare against Starmer and his cabinet. Yep. They are currently besieged. They're currently in the bunker. They're like, okay, we'll just get the things done that we can get. And if Farage is just outside saying, no, you're not, throws in another shell. No, that's gone too.
Yes.
Whatever you do is a waste of time. Why are you still here?
Well, and I think this is what they understand. They can achieve, for the Fabians, more in one day in Downing Street than they could 10 years outside of it.
Yeah, they think so.
And they're very much aware of that.
That's what they think, anyway. Because, again, the system at this point has revealed itself to not be working with them. Right? Mm. Everyone hates Starmer. Starmer's been useless. Mandelson was too much of a curse. And they assumed that because he'd always been fine, he'd always survived the scandals and come back, he'd be all right, it's Mandelson. No, they didn't think the Epstein files were going to drop and that this is going to ruin them. Right. No one saw it coming.
And I think we talked about this offline because it happened just after our last one of these chats. But, you know, I think I was saying to you, it would have been so easy for him to have handled that situation better because he walked into that PMQs like a lamb to slaughter, not understanding that Kemi was just going to beat him up on it. And I remember saying to you, all he had to do was the morning before PMQs come out and absolutely bury Mandelson, take away Kemi's, fire. But instead, he just walked in and started talking about procedures.
Yeah.
And of course, he got rolled by. And they don't seem to have understood. It doesn't seem to have occurred to them that there was a problem.
Well, it's more that Starmer, the things that he relied on were always kept close to his chest, right? Like, he would happily and ruthlessly slice off parts of Labour that he didn't need, but it came to Morgan McSweeney.
Mm.
And he was like, no, essential. I can't do that. Therefore, Pete Manson, I can't just bury him. Mm. I'll call him a traitor in Parliament, but I can't actually just bury him. And so suddenly, it's like, right, the thing he's standing on is now crumbling.
Mm.
And so, I mean, these guys are completely isolated. And I think they're going to be an interesting historical artifact in the future where people say, oh, this is like the Labour government of 2026, when literally, and I remember saying this years ago now, when I was doing my master's in like 2024, I think it was, when I went to like this meeting, Keir Starmer had just been elected, right? So that was it 24? I can't remember, the days go by so fast. But the point is, not long after Summer had just been elected, we have this like meeting, right? And everyone goes in and everyone, because this is a conservative course, everyone's like, oh God, Keir Starmer's going to be awful. I'm like, well, don't worry. I don't think he's going to last out the time. And they're like, yeah, but there's no way of removing him and the Labour Party won't just give him up. I'm like, yeah, I know. But what will happen, I think, is that essentially everyone around him will just be looking at him saying, Keir, why are you still here?
Mm.
Everyone wants you to go. And he's arrived in that position now. Mm. Right? Now, I didn't know how it was going to happen. I just knew he would do things that were so goddamn unpopular that nobody wants him here. And so the question is, can Keir Starmer face down the entire country and just stick it out? And the answer is, he's going to try.
And Keir constitutionally, Starmer, yes.
Yeah, but I mean, like, lame duck doesn't even half describe the position that Keir Starmer is in. Like, he said, no, we're going to go forward from here with confidence and continue changing the country. And then he's got his little spiel underneath. But point is,
he won't be able to do anything, but he can just squat it.
And that's his point.
I mean, if anybody can be that soulless and unimaginative and procedural, Keir Starmer is the guy for that job.
I mean, it's wild to have so many people. Not just, I mean, like, it's one thing having all your political enemies saying, no, I hate you, get out.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Keir Starmer and them are like, you know, Boris Johnson should resign. Yeah, of course, you think that. Obviously, duh, right? But then you've got your own sub-parties. You've got your backbenchers. And you've got members of your own cabinet who are like, oh, this is a bit rough. Like, and Keir Starmer somehow is immune to all of this. Just like, Keir, you're not welcome Everyone around you is saying you're not welcome. And so why did they all make a statement in his support? Well, I'm guessing that he threatened them with the general election.
Okay. So that was the point I tried to make earlier. So they can destroy each other, because if they try and push him out, he's perfectly able just to walk out onto that podium and say, I'm calling a general election.
Yep.
So they've got, it's mutually assured destruction.
Exactly. In other times, the Labour MPs were like, okay, I think I can win my seat. I'm in Ilford North.
Yeah.
Strong Labour, I'm in Wales, wherever. Strong Labour constituencies. Okay, call a general election. I'll survive it and you'll be gone.
I mean, there were maybe 30 to 40 Labour MPs who could be pretty sure they're going to win their seat and that's it.
Well, like
and,
we saw
and
on
they've
the
got 300 of them.
Like we saw on the electoral calculus, even like quite optimistically, 68 of them survive. Like, and it could go down to as low as 14.
Yeah, but you don't know which one survive.
Of course.
Only about 30 or 40 know that they've got such a robustly strong seat, and then the next 20 to 30 are random.
It's not even clear that any of them have safe seats anymore.
Yes.
And so, exactly, as you say, like, they're all sat there in the Starmer bunker sweating, going like, right, okay, you kind of got to resign. And Kirsten was like, if I'm going to resign, I'm calling that general election, or you'll get one called for you, whatever, the public will demand chaos because of chaos, whatever. And basically, he's just threatened, no, you're all going to lose your jobs, or you stick by me. It's that simple.
And normally, I'm quite good at thinking through to the next level, but if I was a Labour MP, what do I do in that situation? I think I've been checkmated.
Yes. And so he tells everyone, nope, I'm not doing that. Keir Starmer's one of only four Labour leaders. I'm not resigning. You can resign if you want. Lots of other people are resigning, but I'm not resigning. And there was this really interesting, statement where he just comes out and says, I've won every fight I've ever had, I've ever been in here. And so I'm going to fight this. And it's like,
okay. First of all, I don't think that Keir Starmer has been in an actual fight
ever.
Obviously. What he means by I've won every fight I've ever been on is I have had arrested people who I don't like every single time.
Why have you U-turned so much if you win every fight?
Well, and that, yeah.
But also, Morgan McSweeney masterminded me. But also, he just got lucky because Nigel Farage decided this was the moment he was going to step into right-wing politics. And it split the right, as Diane Abbott correctly pointed out. And it's ruined the Labour and Tories for now. But Farage has obviously taken up that ground, blah, blah, blah. Right. So this like, tough talking is very, very peculiar. We won with the landslide majority. Every fight I've been in, I have won. It's like, okay, well, you're living through the counterexample to that right now, where you're fighting the entire country and everyone around you. And so all they can do is essentially say, right, Keir Starmer is either going to ruin us all, or we stick by him like flies on paper, right?
If he actually does this, if he actually hangs on for another 3 years in this condition,
it's mad.
Oh, that would be torrid for everybody involved. It'd be torrid for us, the electorate, the British. It would be awful for him.
Yep. I mean, none of them can go into a pub in England. Like, not one of them. They're all banned from the pubs of England because the landlords in England are just like, it's just, what do these guys do with themselves? But then Keir Starmer received a standing ovation and a 37-second applause as he entered the room to speak to the Labour MPs in 10 Downing Street. Because this is when they're in the heart of the bunker. And obviously, everyone's just like, all right, so this is like North Korea. Right. This is like,
I was thinking of the Stalin thing where nobody would want to stop clapping because the first person to stop clapping got shot.
And we know that Starmer has been controlling his party with an iron fist. And so this is exactly the kind of, it is genuinely turning into kind of like Soviet level politics. It's like, no, if we have a kind of glasnost here, then we all fall and the entire Soviet Union falls apart. So Labour just have to literally bind themselves together and say, like, we're just going to sit there and knuckle down and just grit our teeth and get our way through it. Somehow we're going to limp on. And it looks mad. I mean, again, Diane Abbott came out and was like, well, I think this was staged because...
Oh, you think? Yeah.
This is catastrophic. I think he's not going to last beyond May. And they want him to take responsibility for these failures. But the thing is, I think they don't understand the second order effects of all of this. Right? Because if you think about it, You can, in Keir Starmer's position, just say, I'm actually just going to sit here forever until legally I have to call an election. So, okay, well, technically we can't remove you, but do you think there are going to be any second or third order effects of this?
Yeah,
like,
yes.
do you think, like, it's not just about what happens in Parliament, because as we spoke about earlier, the power of selection still lies within the electorate. And we are watching, like, this is when all anyone's talked about politically in this country for the past 3 or 4 days. So it's just like, right, okay, so the general public is watching you, clinging to power for power's sake, and they're going to be like, right, okay, but I don't like the Labour Party already. I don't like the way they're behaving in this moment. And you can do whatever you want, but this, I've said before, I think this is the last Labour government ever.
And let's just go back to the point that I made at the beginning of all of this, which is the core Blairite project was to take every amount of power that you could have in Parliament and separate it out to people who are going to be their friends. Even if they are people who are Blairite minded, if they can see the Prime Minister has lost patronage and that he's basically got no power and he can't do anything, all of them are going to start protecting their own arses as well. And so basically the Blairite project has built a structure that relies on everybody wanting the top man to be a Blairite. Yes. If he falls, if he crumbles, if he no longer has power, the whole mechanism of the British state is now free to start doing their own thing and protecting their own interests. So the whole mechanism of the British state crumbles at that point.
And if Nigel Farage, I mean, you know, Farage is weak on a lot of things, but he might not be weak on the Quangocracy. Right? He might not be weak on the Blairite structure.
Well, apparently that's the whole project of the Sri Lankan chap.
Zia Yusuf.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is the point that David Starkey has made and spoken about this great repeal bill, as in it would be very, very electable. Say, I'm going to undo all of the damage that's been done to the country. Here are, you know, 10 points of things that Blair did that we can just literally write one bill, pass it on day one, and pop the whole thing.
So that was actually what David Cameron first ran on.
Oh, really?
It was the Great Reform Bill, and it was talked about on day one, they're going to reverse everything Blair did, and when it came to it, they bottled it.
Unbelievable. Mm. Unbelievable. But anyway, the point is, I mean, let's hope Farage doesn't bottle it, but the point is, This is coming to an end. We are definitely in the last days of the Starmer bunker, because they're clinging on by the skin of their teeth, and there are loads of challenges coming up. Like the Mandelson files are about to drop. You've got the Gordon and Denton by-election that's going to drop. That's become kind of totemic about the future of the country. You've got the local elections in May, and that's assuming that no other giant scandal just falls into his lap.
Oh, and they will.
And, I mean, we've got a bunch of other loose ends. What's happening with the Ukrainian rent boy star?
Oh, yeah.
Why are they attacking your properties? That could drop any time. We could find out the whatever the dirty nonsense behind that is. We could find that out any time. And yet, for some reason, Labour are like, nope, there's no second order effects. We are like Wile E. Coyote. And if we just keep running off that cliff...
As long as you don't look down.
As long as you don't look down, gravity won't take hold. And so there are a couple of other things, right? So, Burnham... has called for stability and unity. And in a different, doorstepping interview, he was like, oh, yeah, I support Keir Starmer. So obviously, the sort of things they have to say in the front. But there's no way Burnham isn't making moves in the background, right? Because he is basically the last hope that the Labour Party have. He's actually a relatively popular guy. I mean, when we say popular, it's always proportional. He's got like a minus 5% approval rating or something, but that's...
Which is stellar in Labour circles.
That's stellar in almost all political circles these days, to be honest. So, like, you know, Andy Burnham probably is one of the most popular politicians in the country because he comes across like a fairly normal, likeable guy who doesn't hang around with Peter Manson in his underpants. Mm. So good thing there. So... he is obviously thinking, how am I going to get a bloody seat? Because, I mean, Gordon and Denton was probably the best possible shot he was going to have. I mean, that's off the table now. And it doesn't look like there are any Labour safe seats. So who knows?
I don't know. I suspect that what would happen is somebody who's got a safe Labour seat as much as one can be will just resign and let him take the seat.
Well, that's what they thought that was happening with Gordon and Denton.
Oh, is that
Starmer blocked it?
Didn't the guy quit for scandal or something?
Yeah. For, you know, WhatsApp messages about some of his local constituents. But
there will be some Labour MP who's got something else to do with their life that doesn't need the money, who will step aside if they need to.
Well, one would think. I mean, that guy didn't have to resign.
Yes.
Like, you know, there was nothing forced.
But I mean, if Starmer's still in position, he can just block that one as well.
Exactly. Starmer, what stops Starmer from just blocking him forever? Right? No, we need the Manchester mayoralty far too much. Can't be Andy Burnham. You're gone, right? And then you've got Angela Rayner. So, of course, she's come out and publicly backed Keir Starmer. She's, oh, yeah, this is terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. Full support from the Prime Minister. He has my full confidence. And notice how every time they say this, this is the kiss of death, right?
Yes.
I mean, Starmer was like, no, Morgan McSweeney has my full confidence, gone the next day.
Yep.
Like, it just keeps happening, right? So that's interesting. But what's also really interesting is that an Angela for Leader website briefly went live before being pulled down. The Red Queen is making moves behind the scenes.
Oh, dear. You don't want, you don't, if
the domain was registered with the same company as her official parliamentary site.
I mean, it's one of those things. Of course she's going to be doing this in the background, but a basic hygiene level, don't accidentally publish it. I mean,
it shows you the competence of Labour, right? But they've said, oh, then this is a false flag operation, obviously deliberately.
No, it's...
No one thinks so.
They've all got one. Wes Streeting has got one of these. Andy Burnham, they've all got one. I wonder, and he probably has. I think David Lammy's probably got one. He probably thinks he can win as well.
God, please.
Yes.
I mean, we were talking about this. Like, if someone were to actually do the decent thing and resign, who would you want to take over?
David Lammy.
And it would be David Lammy.
Yes. Right?
Just out of comedic, comedic reasons.
But for 3 years, we would have a Ugandan arguing with a Nigerian about what the British people are entitled to.
Exactly. And that destroys all of the arguments about multiculturalism.
Yes.
Who is it for? It's for foreigners and not for us. So at least we would have that. And then finally, Nigel is, of course, on war footing with the election. Nigel is well aware that this is... life or death for Keir Starmer, and it's entirely possible that in the next couple of weeks, even if Starmer decides, oh, I'm going to double down, losing various, you know, the by-election or various other, you know, things that come along, it's very obvious that Starmer is in an incredibly precarious position, and it's very likely a general election will be called.
Actually, I want to make a point there that Connor, formerly of this parish, has been making. It's very important, actually, mm-hmm. is that they've only just started hiring people to fill out seats.
Yes.
For the next general election.
He just announced, in fact, yesterday, I'm going to get candidates.
So what I'm saying to everybody watching this, if you've managed to keep your nose clean and hide your power levels, but you're one of our guys, get yourself on that list.
They're going to be desperate for people.
Yes, and do not say anything. Do not sit there in the interview and give anything other than what you think the safe boomer Farage answer would be. Don't admit to watching Lotus Eaters. Don't do anything. Hide your power levels.
Delete your social media accounts.
Yes, do that first.
Delete any naughty things you may have posted when you were in frustration, and then, you know, if don't ever have an account under your name, basically, where you post politics, because otherwise Farage will wax you. And then Connor is exactly right. Go in, sit down in your best suit and say, yep, I think Nigel Farage is the man to save the country, and I would like to do my part by representing him in wherever it is you live.
Give every safe opinion you can think of.
Yep. And then that will at least make sure that the people around Farage are half decent, even if Farage himself is not necessarily the most reliable of properties. So anyway, the point being, a lot has happened in the past couple of days in British politics. Seismic changes are occurring. It is the death of Blairism. The people running the Blairite Project are useless, like stiff-necked, bull-headed, unaware that the country hates them and wants them gone, and that the moment has become pregnant for a change in politics entirely. Now, whether Farage is the guy who can actually deliver this, obviously, you know, but on the other side, if Nigel is the guy, great, wonderful, I'm happy, I don't care, you know, I'm
worth a shot.
I don't personally hate Nigel Farage, so, you know, I'm not that confident in what he will do, but maybe he's, you know, savvy political operator, blah, 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 maybe he can get it done. But the point is, things are changing, paradigms are shifting, and we are witnessing in real time.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.